The line that I used months ago, which is, it ain't easy being wrong, and it ain't easy being, wait for it, a former sheriff who pled guilty to siphoning thousands from a chaplain's benevolence fund, popping some 180 prescription painkillers illegally, as well as paying a no-show employee for roughly two decades to do what? We don't know, and the feds don't seem to care. I'm talking about Charles Lawson Chuck Wright Jr.
Stealing thousands from taxpayers is brushed off as no big deal, in contrast to what happens to people not in the big club, as George Carlin referred to, those working for or controlling the government. Rarely is there an example of a double standard of justice than the Chuck Wright case. Indeed, if Chuck had been an average citizen who had committed these crimes, the full force of law would have been brought to bear, and as certain as the sun rising in the morning, an extended stay in a cage would have been part and parcel of their fate, but not for members of the big club.
If it were any of us on this call, if it were any of our viewers watching this right now, I think our mugshot would already have been syndicated by the AP. So, you know, you ask about what we're not going to call. We're not going to call it preferential treatment. Whatever we do, we're not going to call it preferential treatment. But what we can call is what Henry McMaster said. And I always go back to this point because the timing is just so awfully rich. As a federal grand jury was being impaneled at the Columbia Federal Courthouse. This is a story that involves three different federal courthouses. I'm getting a little tired of leaving my phone in my beautiful sedan to go into courthouses. Nonetheless, as a federal grand jury was being impaneled at the Matthew J. Perry Courthouse to hear evidence against Chuck Wright, Henry McMaster told press that he always knew Chuck Wright to be a good sheriff, that he's fallen on hard times, and that's all he knows. That's all Henry
McMaster. For the folks that don't pay much attention to the state's history of attorney generals, he was the attorney general before Alan Wilson.
And as I have shared, as attorney general before Alan Wilson, Henry McMaster let an admitted child pedophile previously employed by the Spartanburg County Sheriff's Office walk. Just like this solicitor, a declination letter was sent in that case, and nothing happened, except the taxpayers once again subsidizing that admitted child pedophile's salary because he got another government job and stayed in it for decades. So
the recent guilty plea by former Spartanburg Sheriff Chuck Wright leaves the public wanting justice that will never be. Indeed, the plea deal and subsequent dropping of all state charges associated with Wright's decades abuse of the public trust has left the public with a sour taste in their mouths and anger expressed in thousands of social media posts across the internet. We all can see the fix was in for the sheriff. Is there a double standard in our justice system for those who work for the machine? We all know there is, but there are certain cases that come along that seem to be designed to show the public that there are different rules and different penalties for those who are part of the system of human management. Two different enforcement agencies investigated the constitutional sheriff for over a year, and despite overwhelming evidence of dozens of crimes, decided to charge Wright with only three, count them three charges. Wright agreed to plead guilty to three federal offenses: conspiracy to commit theft concerning programs receiving federal funds, conspiracy to commit wire fraud, and obtaining controlled substances by misrepresentation. Here is a man armed with the power of the state, using that power to steal prescription drugs from poor old people while visiting them in healthcare facilities, while at the same time arresting people for doing the same thing or less. Wright ran a gambling protection racket for two decades, and yet neither the state or federal investigators declined to charge one of their own of this high crime. Why?
I support Alan Wilson. I've known him for a long time. I enjoy the fact that he is not going to stand for any public corruption. We have a proven track record with him. South Carolina needs Alan.
Do you trust your government? I mean, do you trust your government? It seems like everybody puts a lot of faith in the government. You know, after the COVID thing, you'd think everybody and nobody would have any trust in the government. But you still see people saying that they trust the government. It's kind of like, what is this public trust? This thing they call, you know, the public trust. They say the elected officials hold the public trust. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that we trust them to do the right things? We trust them to be honest and have virtue and have good morals? Is that what that means? Does that mean that they hold the public trust that they will not do anything against our rights or steal money or hurt people or use their authority in the wrong way? Is that what the public trust is? Because it seemed like to me that I'd have no reason at all to trust these people. Look at the track record of things that they've lied to us about, and it's incredible. Vietnam War and the Gulf of Tonkin and how that was a sham and got us into the Vietnam War where, I don't know, 2.5 million kids went rotating through there. How many of those suffer today from PTSD? And the Veterans Affairs, they hardly take care of anybody. And look at the 55,000 that were killed over there. For what? For nothing. For a global empire. For money. For profit. For control. Look at all the Gulf War, the first Gulf War, where Saddam Hussein and the incubator babies and remember Colin Powell holding up the little thing with all this vial of anthrax and Saddam Hussein could kill millions of people with it and all of it a lie. Remember what after 9/11 and Afghanistan and 20 years of Afghanistan and look at what went on in Iraq, and Iraq was part of Al-Qaeda and had weapons of mass destruction, too. And we had to go over there all from a lie. 20 years of lies. And it's just over and over and over again. And then you get to the corona, and you got lockdowns and masks that don't work and social distancing that doesn't make any sense and the mask, you can sit down and you can take your mask off and you stand up, you got to put it back on and then the shot. And then they tell us it's safe and effective when they knew it was a lie. They knew all these were lies. It wasn't just, you know, they made a mistake. It was lying to you. And yet people have public trust in them. And then you look at all the crooked politicians and all that get caught. Now you look at the sheriff. Sheriff Chuck Wright, and what happened to him? Well, he's been crooked for over 20 years, and yet SLED and the FBI do this little investigation, didn't even last quite a year, and then make this plea deal with him, that he won't even get a damn jail time. I tell you what, let's go over it real quick, and Fox News, Andrew Fancher did a yeoman's job. He kept after this long after the Post and Courier down in Charleston got a little tidbit that SLED and the FBI were looking into some credit card bills that Mr. Chuck Wright run up on the county courts. But listen to what Andrew's got to say about it.
But I want to talk now about a story that Andy has been driving for the better part of the past year. And I also want to point out that he was doing this at a time when the entire media establishment of the upstate in South Carolina and the entire state was paying literally no attention to this story, with one or two exceptions. Andy, you more than any other member of the Fourth Estate, I believe, are responsible for the justice that has now descended upon Sheriff Chuck Wright of Spartanburg County, South Carolina, one of the most powerful, popular law enforcement officers in South Carolina. Andy, you were up there today, watching Chuck Wright face the music. And let me ask you first, give us a recap of the hammers that have fallen and not fallen on Chuck Wright.
Sure. I guess I'll start with a line that I used months ago, which is, it ain't easy being wrong, and it ain't easy being, wait for it, a former sheriff who pled guilty to siphoning thousands from a chaplain's benevolence fund, popping some 180 prescription painkillers illegally, as well as paying a no-show employee for roughly two decades to do what? We don't know, and the feds don't seem to care. I'm talking about Charles Lawson, Chuck Wright Jr. Before I even go into my treatise, I wanted to pull up an email that I sent to Chuck back in February of this year, which, if we understand our timeline, was long before it was popular to speak on God's pick for sheriff of the world. Sheriff Wright, good afternoon. I'm Andrew Fancher, a journalist with Fitz News. Do you care to provide comment on the now-confirmed criminal investigation into you? Like any outlet, we operate on deadlines and appreciate your time and service. Now, as with every email to Chuck Wright while he was in office, I received nothing, not from him, not from his public information officer. But nonetheless, I did actually lock eyes with him earlier this week on Monday for his federal arraignment, where both he and two federal co-defendants were granted $25,000. We're talking PR bonds, so he didn't have to pay a cent. But look at the love and luster between him and I. So that, of course, is me in my beautiful Marshall's coat. And this reaction, you see, he was stoic leaving the courthouse alongside one of his attorneys, as you could see there off to the right, former U.S. Congressman, former solicitor essentially to Spartanburg, Trey Gowdy. We also have Gregory Harris. He's not pictured here, but Chuck was very stoic leaving the Greenville County Courthouse on Monday until I, you know, I became an obstruction in his field view. While walking with him, as you can see, there are several other reporters who walked. I asked him two specific questions that don't appear to have come up and does not appear will come up in any of the investigations that were once into him, because, I mean, if the SLED investigation is concluded, I suppose, and the federal authorities are all giving themselves pats on the back after today, as we saw. You know, as we have extensively and exclusively reported, there appears to be an extensive and, yes, very highly illegal gambling ring that has just flourished under Chuck Wright's leadership. We're talking about a sheriff who was elected in 2004, sworn in 2005, and remained in office until they pretty much had to drag him out of office earlier this year in 2025. As we have uncovered and again exclusively reported, it appears as though as early as his first bid for sheriff was bankrolled, at least in part, by gambling kingpins. That's according to deputies who, at Chuck's direction, went to specific locations and picked up cash to allegedly funnel it back into his campaign coffers, of course, under their names, which in and of itself is highly illegal. I don't know what the statute of limitation is on that, but at least in the court of public opinion, it ain't going nowhere. In fact, after today's hearing, where he not only officially pled guilty, but the judge accepted his guilty plea. We're talking three different guilty pleas, not only for him, but two co-defendants who I'll get into in a moment. We heard from yet another individual with extremely detailed and consistent stories regarding the gambling in Spartanburg County. So that face that you saw Chuck making was after I asked about two specific individuals that appear to have helped get him elected, and help is an understatement, back in 2004. I also asked about the status. If we could pull that up one more time. I also asked about the status of a cold case that his sheriff's office is working. And I will go back to what I say every time I'm on our stream. If you've got any information, no matter how small you might feel it is, I implore you to email me, andy@fitznews.com. I commend the Rolodex of people who have made this photo possible. We're talking about an armada of past and present law enforcement officers, deputies of the Spartanburg County Sheriff's Office and adjacent law enforcement agencies. We're talking officers from every corner of the state who at one point in time, depending on how long you're in law enforcement, has an absolutely wild and crazy and absurd Chuck Wright story. But getting into what actually happened today, you see, I was a little silent in our first segment because I was still getting all my notes in order here. Federal court and all its promise. We still can't take any recording devices in, so we got to record the old-fashioned way. So what I saw in federal court today was Chuck Wright, as well as his former Sheriff's Office Chaplain Amos Durham, as well as his former, air quote, code enforcement officer, referred to by federal authorities as a no-show employee, because what Lawson Berry L.B. Watson, I already got the photo pulled up, you knew where I was going, what Lawson Berry L.B. Watson was actually doing for 20 years employed at the Sheriff's Office remains unclear. As I have reported, all right, we are in receipt of internal communication as well as letterheads, from the desk of Mark Keel, indicating that SLED, as early as 2018, was aware of serious concerns involving this man, his title, his authority, and can you guess what SLED did at that time? Because it appears as though they did nothing but acknowledge the certified letters coming in and respond to the emails regarding this man appearing to abuse sheriff's office technology to stalk, berate, what have you, residents of Reedville, where he currently resides in a massive house with an extensive classic car collection in the back. Nothing to look into there, right, y'all? So he pled guilty. L.B. Watson pled guilty to just one count of conspiracy to commit wire fraud to the tune of $200,000. Just one count, right? So it carries a maximum 20 years in prison, $250,000 fine, as well as 3 years of supervision. There is also restitution involved in that. The second co-defendant, who also pled guilty in federal court today and whose guilty plea was accepted, as I noted, Amos Durham. Now, this is not only a picture of Amos Durham and Chuck Wright, but I decided to blow up Chuck Wright's eyes in this particular photograph, which I believe was taken in about 2023, 2024 at one of his annual prayer breakfasts. The reason I blew up this picture is because I sent it to a former narcotics officer, to a drug to a DRE here in the state. And every law enforcement officer I sent this photo to said that his pupils were indicative of being high at that time. So, nonetheless, we also saw Amos Durham here, all right, who accused of stealing money from the sheriff's office. He's accused of stealing money from taxpayers, and he shows up to federal court in Tom Ford glasses. Just the irony. He pled guilty to one count of conspiracy to commit theft concerning programs receiving federal funds. That carries a maximum of 5 years, with a $250,000 fine, 3 years supervision. Then we have the man, the myth, the disgraced legend himself, Chuck Wright, who I photographed here walking in with Trey Gowdy, as well as Gregory Harris, to plead guilty to 3 counts today. That is conspiracy to commit theft concerning programs receiving federal funds, conspiracy to commit wire fraud, and obtaining controlled substances by misrepresentation. Altogether, that carries fines of up to $750,000, up to 29 years in prison, and up to 9 years supervision, with, of course, restitution that would be decided at sentencing. That, however, is the maximum best case scenario if we want to pop a pill of hopium in this case. My hopium done run out. In fact, my hopium tank officially bottomed out last night when we received 10th Circuit Solicitor Micah Black's declination letter, where the freshman first term, not even 10 months into his first term solicitor, declined to prosecute the alleged state level violations that agents with the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division uncovered during their joint investigation with the FBI into Chuck, spanning roughly a year. So this is
tell
where
our people
are at
what
this
that
time.
Means, Andy. A declination letter for those who don't understand. Tell them what did Black do? So there are all these. There's a state investigation into Chuck Wright. They found evidence of crimes. They send it to the prosecutor. The prosecutor recused himself. Sent it to the attorney general. Attorney general sent it to Micah Black. But there's clear evidence that he's committed crimes. Why didn't Micah Black prosecute him?
I think to answer that question, we have to take 2 steps back. So, correct. In the state of South Carolina, what the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division does, right, it obviously investigates a crime. And they will work hand in hand with the solicitor over the jurisdiction of that crime, and together they will perhaps determine charges, and the solicitor will ultimately charge, right? So as these crimes occurred within Chuck's own jurisdiction, his solicitor, Barry Barnett, recused himself from charging in that case. Now, we don't know what specific charges there were, and we'll get into that in a moment. So Barnett recuses himself, which means that this hot potato lands on the table of South Carolina Attorney General Alan Wilson. Why am I emphasizing that? Because Chuck Wright previously endorsed Alan Wilson during one of his successful, you know, elections for Attorney General. I believe in his campaign ad that when we posted it, got more ads, I mean, got more views than Alan Wilson's announcement for governor. In that video, Chuck talks about how he's known Alan Wilson a long time, that he's got a proven track record with Alan, that Alan ain't going to go easy on public corruption. So this guy who Chuck has known for a long time, per Chuck in Alan Wilson propaganda, refers the case. He assigns the case to 10th Circuit Solicitor Micah Black. He doesn't refer to any of the tenured nearby solicitors. He reaches across the upstate and finds this guy. This guy, Micah Black, is subsequently responsible. He is charged with charging the former sheriff as well as Amos Durham, because those two who landed in the sights of state investigators. Micah Black declined to prosecute, even though, and here, let me pull up this over here, and I'll go into what Micah Black and I talked about in today's press conference. So there's the letter. There's the letter, essentially. Well, not essentially. I mean, there he is. He is declining to prosecute any of the state-level violations that SLED might or might not have uncovered during their joint investigation with the feds into Chuck Wright. During the press conference, after the guilty pleas were accepted on all three defendants, we heard from USA O'Brien Sterling. We heard from a host of authorities, as well as Micah Black. Micah Black went up to the podium, essentially reiterated his reasoning for declining to prosecute, which is that essentially the feds already got it handled. I mean, I will summarize his two-page letter to say the feds already got it. And, you know, the federal charges carry greater penalty than state charges. And, you know, it's the same crime. I'm going to be charging him with the same crime, guys. So we just can't do that.
We've never seen that happen before. Alex Murdaugh.
Yeah, I mean,
Russell Lafitte.
Let's talk about the difference here, because, you know, in the Murdaugh case, you've got feds and state not only both bringing charges, not only both trying to get the most serious charges and most lengthy sentences possible, they're literally tripping over each other to get ahead of each other to get in court. I mean, it was like a battle to see who could outdo each other in prosecuting Alex Murdaugh. Yet in this case, you got the state basically saying, we're good.
Right. And in our article, in the article that we published last night, we quoted law enforcement officers, individuals who were integral to the fall of Chuck Wright, speaking on how they feel about that declination. I'm not going to cuss on their behalf, but there were quite a bit of profanities. In fact, early returns from within the Spartanburg County Sheriff's Office, you know, the office that all the authorities are patting themselves on the back with arresting the one guy we are going to restore the integrity of the sheriff's office. All right. Well, the people within that sheriff's office, at least two that I spoke to, they were pissed. They were pissed.
They
saw that as a proverbial middle finger. During the press conference today, because I'm still gathering my notes, I'm all over the place, guys. During the press conference today, I asked Solicitor Black about at least one state-level offense that we know about. Now, that's not based off of sources. It's based off of, stand by, an incident report that sources pointed us to. Now, who knows what all SLED looked at during their years-long investigation into Chuck. We know about this one incident report because sources pointed us in that direction, and then we FOIA'd for it. All right, so it's not easy to uncover some of the evidence that authorities are looking at. This incident report alone notes that around $1,188 went missing from the Spartanburg County Sheriff's Office, and that money was not found to be missing until Chuck took his leave of absence. And in the incident report, all right, because this isn't federal money either, right? This is state money. This is a state level offense. In the incident report, it notes that only a select few people even have access to the bank bag where this money was being stored. And I could read off everybody who has access to the bank bag, or I could save us the trouble and tell you that only one person who had access to the bank bag has been charged and pled guilty to stealing from the sheriff's office. But
let me ask you guys,
Black confirmed, just let me real quick, Black confirmed that there will be no state level prosecution. I asked him that point blank, which means that what I just showed you, what we just talked about, is null and void.
Let me ask you guys this, and because we're seeing comments from people, it bothers them too. And I'm glad that people are up on how, you know, wrong this is. I mean, and so I guess the question I got to ask you guys is, why do you think they're backing off like this? Why do you think these prosecutors
Why do you think that he was allowed to do this for decades? I mean, this guy's not exactly subtle. The 1,000 and change that Andy's referencing here is like the smallest thing that he's accused of doing. Put the South Carolina criminal code on a bingo card to see how many laws he could break. It's like you look through the criminal code and you look at the different sections. He's got one on almost all of them. I mean, the reason that we had to wait decades for the feds to come in and break this up and why the state is not doing anything, I don't think it takes a genius to put that together.
But are they breaking it up? And I think this goes back to what, you know, Jen and I were talking during the Murdoch segment about. There's this whole larger criminal component to that story that's being just completely ignored. No one's looking into it in the press. Sure as hell no one's looking into it from a prosecutorial side. But here we have in the Chuck thing, Andy was talking about it at the beginning, the gambling connections, some of these drug connections to Chuck. Where's that investigation? Where are those indictments? I mean, these prosecutors and investigators are – I mean, I understand. Yeah.
Slap on the wrist, baby. He's going to be in and out. I mean, at Chuck's age and for what we have documented that he has done, there's no reason that he should be seeing the blue sky for quite some time.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And if it were any of us on this call, if it were any of our viewers watching this right now, I think our mugshot would already have been syndicated by the AP. So, you know, you ask about what we're not going to call. We're not going to call it preferential treatment. Whatever we do, we're not going to call it preferential treatment. But what we can call is what Henry McMaster said. And I always go back to this point because the timing is just so awfully rich. As a federal grand jury was being impaneled at the Columbia Federal Courthouse. This is a story that involves three different federal courthouses. I'm getting a little tired of leaving my phone in my beautiful sedan to go into courthouses. Nonetheless, as a federal grand jury was being impaneled at the Matthew J. Perry Courthouse to hear evidence against Chuck Wright, Henry McMaster told press that he always knew Chuck Wright to be a good sheriff, that he's fallen on hard times, and that's all he knows. That's all. Henry
and for the folks that don't pay much attention to the state's history of attorney generals, he was the attorney general before Alan Wilson.
And as I have shared, as attorney general before Alan Wilson, Henry McMaster let an admitted child pedophile previously employed by the Spartanburg County Sheriff's Office walk. Just like this solicitor, a declination letter was sent in that case, and nothing happened, except the taxpayers once again subsidizing that admitted child pedophile's salary because he got another government job and stayed in it for decades. So, apropos of nothing, this is South Carolina.
Yeah. Well, and here's our promise, folks. As Jen Wood said in her segment, she's not done. She's not done digging on these bigger connections tied to Murdoch. And Andy, I get the impression you're not done either.
I mean, again, it's just reading the press release today from authorities, because, you know, we're getting a whole bunch of this. Man, we got him. It wasn't easy. It wasn't easy getting that sheriff to plead guilty to, you know, three – I don't want to call them flyover charges because, I mean, the dude did resign. He resigned amid a federal investigation. The feds brought the ruckus, no doubt. But were they a bull in a china shop on this one? Hell no. Because look at what we've managed to uncover in a less amount of time. I mean, in 6 months, we're talking about multiple – Fitz News alone has identified multiple suspects in at least three – different cold cases at the Spartanburg County Sheriff's Office.
Can I jump in here with one thing? I've seen an interesting comment here. This guy's saying the feds trump state, you idiot. This is normal practice. Yes, it is very normal for state authorities to not waste prosecutorial resources on a case once federal prosecutors have taken it over. However, the interesting thing here is, and then he, you know, denigrates you, calls you a troll, climb back in your hole.
Well, yeah, this guy is also a friend of Chuck, and this is expected.
I don't really care about this guy personally. Whatever, he can, you know.
No, but I mean, the FOCs, the friends of Chuck, clearly they have a problem reading because we've been kicking stuff out for months now. The days of pleading ignorance on Chuck Wright timed out probably 6 or 7 months ago. That's me being generous. So yeah, that's
but if I may just address this point, I think it's really important to say Donald Trump is a loose cannon when it comes to pardons for Republicans. I mean, we've got pictures on our website of Trump mugging with Chuck back before Chuck's downfall. This is why I think Micah made a big mistake by not pressing state charges, because that is the only way to guarantee that these charges even exist at the end of Trump's administration. I mean, if you look at what Joe Biden did,
the door open. Yeah, because a presidential pardon doesn't apply to state level charges. That's federal charges. And as we know, our illustrious president has pardoned sheriffs convicted just recently, too, I believe, out of Virginia. I forgot what that gentleman was charged with. But yeah, so sheriffs have a history of being pardoned under President Trump. And Trey Gowdy at Chuck's side for the entirety of this thing certainly fuels speculation. That is why I asked our U.S. Attorney General Brian Sterling whether or not a presidential pardon has come into play. And he told press when I asked that he was not aware of that even coming up. I'm paraphrasing, of course. So we will see what happens. Of course, for there to be a pardon, there needs to be a conviction. And we are still months out from a sentencing. But Fitz News, unfortunately for the friends of Chuck, the FOCs, as Spartanburg deputies call them, we're not going anywhere. We're only going to keep on digging, because this is a bottomless void, as Jen Wood can attest, because we have spent, I mean, literally days and days and days through property records, I mean, tracing businesses to Kentucky, to Florida. It is a magnificent vortex in Spartanburg. It's a case study.
It is the first time that I have seen that I've researched a story that has felt as bottomless as Murdoch. And it's bad. The things that we are uncovering are bad,
to say the least.
To say the least, without giving too much away.
Right.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm here to tell you one thing. Andy Pantry is a hell of an investigator. He didn't let that dog get away from him. he's like a damn coon dog on a coon. He has worked tirelessly to find out about Chuck. And then to turn around and have the FBI charge him with just three little charges, and have the state, Alan Wilson, appoint a rookie, and then have that rookie decide, we're not going to cover any of that. We're not even going to look into all the other things. We're just going to, you know what? We're just going to let the feds handle that, and the sheriff's just going to sign this little agreement that says he ain't going to be no more elections and no more law enforcement for him. Well, if he gets convicted of his little federal offenses, which he pled guilty to, he's not going to be able to have a firearm or hold office anyway. But he wants us to believe that he's just doing it because he don't want to waste state resources. No, that's bullshit. This is Alan Wilson doing his little slimy, dirty, rotten crap that he'd been doing ever since he got in there, just like his daddy Joe Wilson. And it's just to placate and cover up all the other stuff that was happening up in Spartanburg County that all of them knew about. Henry McMaster knew about it. Alan Wilson knew about it, and Chuck Wright knew about it, and all the little gambling operations and the pill popping and going around and looking around dead people's stuff and getting pills and everything. They knew all about that. But the system protects itself. How do you trust anybody inside that system?
And this brings us right back to the core problem. When government judges itself, other than a few outlying situations, well, government's just going to determine that everything is constitutional. whatever it decides it wants to do. And that's how Spooner described it as well. For everything a government pleases to do will, of course, be determined to be constitutional. If the government itself is permitted to determine the question of the constitutionality of its own acts, those, he said, who are capable of tyranny are capable of perjury to sustain it. And so the logical conclusion here, a free people, or anything even remotely in the range of being somewhere near a land of the free, well, in that situation, you can never, ever, ever allow government to have the final say over itself. He said, if, in other words, the people had reserved to themselves no veto upon the acts of the government, instead of being a mere servant and agent of the people, would be an absolute despot over the people. It would have all power in its own hands, because the power to punish carries all other powers with it. And that, in and of itself, would represent unlimited power, total tyranny. He said, a power that can of itself and by its own authority punish disobedience, can compel obedience and submission, and is above all responsibility for the character of its laws. In short, it is a despotism. So what about all those checks that we learned about in civics class as we were growing up? Well, let's run through some of the big ones. First of all, the oath of office. They all swear an oath to uphold the Constitution, and that should stop them, right? Well, Spooner thought this was absurd, and he considered oaths meaningless in practice, because people with power, or people who want to wield all kinds of power to harm other people, to control them, to attack their liberty, to rip them off, to rob them, to kill them, well, they don't have honor. They don't care. They'll say whatever. And he put it like this: it is of no avail to say, in answer to this view of the case, that in surrendering their liberties into the hands of the government, the people took an oath from the government that it would exercise its power within certain constitutional limits. For when did oaths ever restrain a government that was otherwise unrestrained? And if the government determines the extent of its own powers, it is unrestrained. And he tied that all together. He said, or when did a government failed to determine that all its acts were within the constitutional and authorized limits of its power, if it were permitted to determine that question for itself. Moving on, what about public debate and protests and pressure, speaking out and printing and publishing? Well, that changes things, right? Wrong again. And Spooner said, neither is it of any avail to say that if the government abuse its power and enact unjust and oppressive laws, the government may be changed by the influence of discussion and the exercise of the right of suffrage, which we'll get to in a moment. And here's why. Because for tyrants, words without action, that's just noise. It is meaningless to them. He said, discussion can do nothing to prevent the enactment or procure the repeal of unjust laws, unless it be understood that the discussion is to be followed by resistance. It's almost like, well, you can talk about it, but talk means nothing. If talk is followed up with action, then maybe they start listening. He said, tyrants care nothing for discussions that are to end only in discussion. And Spooner closed this thought out with maybe the most important takeaway for all of us in modern times. Anything that you do, unless it affects the enforcement of their so-called laws, regulations, rules, orders, and the like, well, it's worthless to tyrants. They don't care about it. It's just noise. Discussions, he said, which do not interfere with the enforcement of their laws, are but idle wind to them. And that brings us to the next check on power, the one that most people think is really the only check that we the people have: vote the bums out. And this is where Spooner twists the knife and explains in detail why it just doesn't work. In fact, it's impossible, at least to start, because it's only every few years, and that can't stop the tyranny that's happening right now. You got to sit around and bear it for 2 or 4 or 6 years or much longer. He said suffrage is equally powerless and unreliable. it can be exercised only periodically. And the tyranny must at least be born until the time for suffrage comes. Now, let's say magically somehow the people are able to vote out all the bums, get rid of all the problematic people and replace them with new ones, even though that never seems to happen. But let's say hypothetically, even in that situation, the new bums come in and they face the same incentives that the previous ones had. Corruption, power, and the like. He said, besides, when the suffrage is exercised, it gives no guarantee for the repeal of existing laws that are oppressive, and no security against the enactment of new ones that are equally so. The second body of legislators are liable and likely to be just as tyrannical as the first. And this should be obvious because the same people chose the bad ones to start. Are they suddenly wising up and choosing a bunch of awesome people? Spooner didn't think that would happen. He said, if it be said that the second body may be chosen for their integrity, the answer is that the first were chosen for that very reason and yet proved tyrants. The second, he said, will be exposed to the same temptations as the first and will be just as likely to prove tyrannical. And he went on to totally mock the idea that you can rely on vote the bums out to get a bunch of new people in there that are going to be honest and trustworthy. He said, whoever heard that succeeding legislators were, on the whole, more honest than those that preceded them. What is there in the nature of men or things to make them so? If you answered on that second question, absolutely nothing, you passed Lysander Spooner's test for today. And of course,
public trust. Public trust doesn't exist. That is a figment of your imagination. You know where that was driven into you? As soon as you were born and you were wrapped in that red, white, and blue American flag, and as soon as you got old enough, what'd they start drilling into you? Well, they drilled into you, trust your government. All the police are your friends. And here, we're going to put 15,000 hours of indoctrination to be an obedient little bitch to the government and trust the government because the government loves you. 15,000 hours of government education, don't you know? Now, I'm guilty as anybody. I sent my kids off, too. I was ready to go to work. I had to go to work to pay for all the bills and everything because the government's stealing so much damn money. But we were letting the devil teach our kids. Now, Chuck Wright, that piece of shit isn't going to get away with all this stuff. He ain't going to spend a day in jail for all that he did. And neither will that J.B. Watson or that damn preacher with them fancy glasses on. They're all a part of the system. It's the just us system. It's the big club that we're not in. And that's why they want power and control. That's why they go for government, because they can do their dirty deeds and they can be protected by it. And that's what's happening with Chuck Wright. And I applaud Fitch News for staying on this. And the mainstream media, y'all want to jump on the bandwagon a little bit too late. But that's, as usual, y'all don't do any work. Leave it to the independents. And then the only way that they can get it, once they get the word out and it starts echoing around, that's when mainstream media wants to jump in there and say that they did something. When they're just trying to patch holes. But ask yourself, why do you trust the government? Why indeed? Certainly there's no reason for it. So it's all part of this idea of this collective and this thing that they call government, that is supposed to be a benevolent benefactor of yours, be your agent to protect your rights. You think they've protected your rights? How? Huh? Look at your paycheck next time. Look every time you go anywhere and buy anything at that little receipt, and when it says tax, see how much your slavery to the state cost. You trust them for what? Trust them to build good roads and keep up with good roads? Well, that's a fool's errand, ain't it? Trust in government. Trust. Trust Alan Wilson. Alan Wilson's going to put in a little rookie and say, rookie, I'm going to tell you what. What you do is you decline to charge and tell them that, We're going to let the federal government do all that. And that'll work. So that the fix was in. Fix was in. And old Trey Gowdy. Y'all know I remember Trey Gowdy. He was the one that questioned Hillary Clinton about Benghazi and all. Ended up damn, you know, basically covering it up. And then left there and goes back out into private practice. What he was really hoping is he could get him a seat on the bench when Trump came in. And he was hoping for an appointment to the Supreme Court. But boys and girls, he's too damn... Thank goodness that boy didn't get put on no Supreme Court. Little Beaker. He looks like Beaker on the Muppets. You know, remember that little fella that worked with the chemist and everything? That little Beaker with that funky haircut? That's him. Well, we're down here at the river today. And yeah, it's a beautiful day. Beautiful fall day. And the system is still protecting itself. It doesn't care about you. It doesn't care about me. It cares about power, money, and control. And it's the billionaire class that has run the show for a long, long time that is beginning to put in place the digital panopticon around us that we will not be able to escape. Everything will be tracked and traced. Everything will be managed. Your health care, and once you get to costing too much, maybe they'll even maid you like they're doing up in Canada. Medical assistance in dying. Oh, and hey, y'all, Dick is dead. Yep, Dick himself. Mr. Dick Cheney, the warmonger from hell, the one, the architect of the Iraq invasion. He tied all up in 9/11. He gave testimony behind closed doors, not under oath, and no record. Yeah, that Dick. And everybody, go by the Walter Reed Park down here, the Walter Reed Veterans Park. And the reason they named it Veterans Park was because it's a swamp park, and to get public opinion on their side, they named it Veterans Park. Go by there. Go by there and see what they've done to this hero, this warmongering, responsible for millions and millions and millions of deaths. This warmonger has got all the flags at half staff. That shows you what kind of system that we have, where we reward war criminals. Yep. Donald Trump's going to be right there, too. Warmonger. Blowing up ships in off the coast of Venezuela. I think there were 17 now. 17 extrajudicial murders. Talking about, you know, they're drug dealers and everything. All right, show me the damn proof. Show me the proof. I was arguing with a guy the other day, and this fool kept saying, well, Fox News, well, if you watch Fox News, you'd know the truth. And I said, huh? Where is their proof? Well, the government says that it is that they're cartel criminals. Maduro is the leader of the whole thing. I said, they say that. Where is the proof? And you know what? He doesn't require proof because proof comes from the talking heads behind that damn TV screen. Ladies and gentlemen, we got to have a little bit more sense than that. We got to be a little bit more questioning than that. We have to ask questions, because if we don't ask our questions and get proper, honest answers, we can't be free. That's an impossibility. So do you trust them to give you the right answers? You got to be mentally... Something's got to be mentally wrong with you if you trust them. There's not all men there you can trust. Save a few. There might be a handful. But overall, the system is going to be sure to elevate the people that are of criminal minds. The higher you go, the more criminal the acts. but all the way down to your dog catcher and your county council and your town council, all the way up to the top, is corrupt. It's corrupt and evil. So, think about what you're doing. Think about if you trust your government. And Chuck Wright and Alan Wilson. Whoa. What we got is a pile of shit, y'all. Until next time, boys and girls. Peace.
Well, what about the other two branches, the courts, the president? As Spooner put it, the only way to hold these people accountable while they are in office, violating the Constitution, attacking your liberty, is to rely on the corrupt legislators. I mean, if you think about it, this is pretty stupid. Trying to convince a bunch of people with power who are corrupt, who are violating the rules, to protect you from a bunch of other people in power who are corrupt and violating the rules is just dumb and dangerous. He said, moreover, the judicial and executive departments of the government are equally irresponsible to the people and are only responsible by impeachment and dependence for their salaries to these irresponsible legislators. So what's left? Well, it's the big one. Alter or abolish, right from the Declaration of Independence. But Spooner here, in practice, he forces us to face the hard truth. Tyrants never recognize the right to alter or abolish when it matters. They're happy to grandstand on it, talk about the beautiful prose when it doesn't matter, but when it comes down to addressing their power, then it's always illegal. The right of revolution, he wrote, which tyrants in mockery accord to mankind, is no legal right under a government. It is only a natural right to overturn a government. The government itself never acknowledges this right. And so what does that mean in practice? That's the issue here. To alter or abolish this right, this natural right to alter or abolish, only works as a check on power if you win. All other times, you're a traitor. It doesn't matter if you were right or wrong. You are always a traitor if you lose. He said the right, therefore, can be exercised with impunity only when it is exercised victoriously. All unsuccessful attempts at revolution, however justifiable in themselves, are punished as treason if the government be permitted to judge of the treason. And again, this gets down to the core issue. If you put it all together, if you rely on government to limit government, you're going to get unlimited government guaranteed. He said, these legislators and this government, so irresponsible while in power, can perpetuate their power at pleasure if they can determine what legislation is authoritative upon the people and can enforce obedience to it. No, because they can do all kinds of stuff. They can just get away with whatever when you get down to it. He said, for they can not only declare their power perpetual, but they can enforce submission to all legislation that is necessary to secure its perpetuity. And he gave kind of a laundry list of some types of really crazy things that could happen in such a system. And if you're anything like me, at least a few of these sound at least kind of familiar. He said they can, for example, prohibit all discussion of the rightfulness of their authority, forbid the use of the suffrage, prevent the election of any successors, disarm, plunder, imprison, and even kill all who refuse submission. Add a little robbery into the mix, and all those discussions, the votes, protests, oaths, courts, and the rest, that idle wind, well, government will show you what it means to them from the barrel of a gun. Spooner said, if the government can take a man's money without his consent, there is no limit to the additional tyranny it may practice upon him. Or with his money, it can hire soldiers to stand over him, keep him in subjection, plunder him at discretion, and kill him if he resists. Truth is not always easy to hear. Truth is not always good news, but truth can heal. Learning it is the first step to getting from where we are today, the largest government in history, to where we want to be, a real land of the free. Get us on the path to liberty. And you're never going to hear this kind of lesson in the government-run and government-approved so-called education system. And that's a huge part of the reason why...